I'm Chris Maruleng, Executive Director of Good Governance Africa. The GGA Conversation. It's basically a weekly forum where we examine and discuss the most pressing issues on our continent. Well, our topic today deals with the resurgence of coups in West Africa, which is really a worrying development. As you may be aware, the region has seen 8 military coup attempts in the last 2 years, causing widespread insecurity and a worrying decline in democracy. Well, it's clear that the rule of law in all of these countries has been significantly undermined. Well, with me to help me unpack this interesting dynamic, Monique Bennett, my colleague here at Good Governance Africa. Monique, are there institutions that support the rule of law?
The legislature, the judicial system, all of these institutions play a critical role in allocating resources and maintaining a stable and prosperous society. The high turnover of government in these countries makes it difficult for these institutions to effectively entrench themselves. So it's difficult to hold these leaders accountable. And I think in the case of West Africa, where we have the military highly politicized effectively, there's a struggle to enforce these democratic principles within the military space.
Are there civil-military relations where the military respects their role in the barracks and not in politics?
I think there's been a disconnect between the civil elected governments and these military forces. And we see that in Burkina Faso, for example. There's been a lack of support by government for military to effectively defend themselves against extremist groups. We've seen soldiers being left starving without equipment, and so that is obviously sparked protest and has been a big issue in that country. And I think that just is a great example to show the kind of military and state relations happening across the region.
During the times where we see an upsurge of extremist activity, it is to the military that we rely.
But if there isn't good relations between the state and the military, we leave this opportunity for military to say, well, if the government are not going to support us to, you know, to fight these extremist groups, then we'll take power. And I think also there's been popular protest against these governments. People are no longer waiting for elections to show their grievances. People are protesting, and since 2019 we've seen a huge increase in protest.
Here's a slight curveball for you. Mm-hmm. So if it is the case that in many of these countries in West Africa that the governments were unpopular and the people willed it for them to be removed from the scene, isn't that the will of the people finding expression? It's just that the military might be the instrument.
It's not that the civilians are wanting military rule. They are wanting democratic rule, but they are just taking agency in expressing their grievances. Their support for the military coup action is not support that's going to be maintained. I think they're going to have to win the people over by entrenching these institutions and upholding the rule of law.
Economic growth in all of these countries that have been affected by these coups or unconstitutional changes of power have been largely driven by the extraction of natural resources, a really worrying phenomena. Concerning, though, is that the profits from the extraction of natural resources have primarily benefited the political elite, keeping the citizenry very much in the grips of poverty. Naturally, this fuels frustration and grievances and creates fertile soil for revolution. With me now is none other than my colleague, Mr. Vincent Obisi Orlu. Why do the elites feel like they need to hog all of these resources?
The elites keep this to maintain their power bases, perhaps so that they have something to go back to after they are removed from power or leave power. Or perhaps it's to maintain their patronage networks and balance out ethnic rivalries. However, in doing so, the people on the ground are left out.
In such a dynamic, what are the possible solutions or interventions that can help us stem the tide of these unconstitutional changes of power?
More understanding and acceptance of the grievances of the man on the street. otherwise, the man on the streets will view the military saying, which has put itself and presented itself as a critique of the government, and say that the military is able to sort these problems out, even though the military is just as complicit in these corrupt schemes. The West African region, the Sahelian region, is known and understood to have, because of its history, because of the history of military engagements and the way in which the military has had a role in governance over the course of post-colonial era, these countries haven't struggled with effectively making room for civil society space. However, in spite of that, when there are grievances, the people do go on the street and they protest against what's happening. What needs to happen is international actors such as ECOWAS, the African Union, need to move away from a system where they're only interacting with heads of state and speaking to the heads of state, and also engaging civil society and understanding what civil society's grievances are. Otherwise, we reach a circumstance where the political elites, those in power, who might have entered through an election, can now mingle and mangle with the democratic processes and cannot really be challenged, such that the people come to view their only hope of an alternative as the military.
The expansion of extremist networks in Sahel, in the Sahel region, is also a very worrying phenomenon. Well, to help me unpack this is none other than my colleague and head of our climate change and human security program, Stephen Buchanan Clark. You know, as I entered into the conversation with you, I was talking about what we define as external factors. I was a bit euphemistic. What do we mean by external factors in this coup cycle that we see taking place in West Africa?
We're talking about the impact of transnational extremist organizations, which move across borders and have a dire impact on the security of the state. We're also talking about other external factors, like the role of states like France, Russia, and US, and their interests in the region.
This definition of extremists is somewhat worrisome in my view, because it normally is attached to another word, which is Islamic extremists. Is this a good definition for the Sahel region, or is this really badly described?
There's no doubt that the elite members of Al-Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb, ISIS affiliates, are radicalized individuals. But we're talking about big organizations with many foot soldiers, many of whom are really basing their decision on to join these organizations on purely socioeconomic factors and not driven by ideological causes.
Is it fair to say that it is the governments that are in power in many of these countries that use the term extremists and terrorists in order to justify the use of force, that is military force, to deal with, as you say, is a developmental problem?
Absolutely. If you take just Operation Barkhane, which France has spearheaded for the last 8 years, which is its mandate was to fight terrorism across the Sahel, a very broad, open mandate, basically gave the country free rein to advance its security interests and, on the back of that, its economic interests. And you just have to look at one figure. European assistance to the region is around £2 billion per year, whereas humanitarian assistance is about five times less than that. So it clearly shows where the engagement is and where the priorities are.
Until we address this issue of governance, which is basically who gets what, when, and how, ensuring that the authoritative process that allocates resources is institutionalized in ways that support the citizen, we will continue to see more coups, not just in West Africa, but in many countries that suffer a dearth of governance.
A far wiser spend would be to invest in anti-corruption efforts, to invest in really the crisis of governance that we're seeing throughout the Sahel.
We Well, regional economic bodies like ECOWAS and organizations like the African Union are mandated to facilitate stability and development in the region. But really, how effective are they? Are they just these talk shops, or do they actually do something? Well, helping me to unpack this is none other than my colleague Leleti Maluleke. Economic bodies like ECOWAS and the AU, who are expected to intervene, are they effective, Leleti? Do they work?
They have not been silent. Actually, they have condemned, and we have seen with certain countries like Mali, the sanctions were threatened and they got suspended as member states. Mm. What we are saying is that these organizations do not have the capacity, you know, to hinder or deter coups. Mm-hmm. They need proper support, not only from African states, but also internationally. We do not have a continental military that will jump in whenever there are coups, but we have seen them taking initiative and being consistent in their responses.
The go-to solution by organizations like ECOWAS normally seems to be military intervention in the form of peacekeeping. Is this sustainable?
You know, ECOWAS has the protocol on democracy and good governance. You know, it talks about the zero tolerance on, you know, unconstitutional means of change of government. And what we need to start thinking of is how these member states rather internalize those policies and those frameworks that are within ECOWAS and the AU.
And the only way we can internalize them is by ensuring that we have institutions that support good governance, democracy, etc. How do we get those in those member states, in those countries where coups occur?
We first have to start by reviewing the frameworks that we have.
Yeah.
You cannot have the Peace and Security Council being run by the same people that are being taken to court, but you have the same AU promoting such a person. We saw this with Guinea's Alpha Kudo, mm-hmm. who was, you know, given the AU chair in 2017, mm-hmm. while facing accusations, you know, and public outcry in his own countries. Yeah. We need to start review the frameworks that we have within the AU before actually going to the institutions within the member states.
ECOWAS and the AU could be reasonably criticized as being an old boys club that protects each other, and that is why they do nothing when these coups happen.
You have member states that are from the central, you have member states from the west, you have member states from the east, and they all don't have common values.
Just give us an example of what you mean by shared and common values. Shared about what, and common towards what end?
The European Union has a great framework on how member states become part of the European Union. We do not have that within the African Union. So if we have a proper structure on who you know, has access to the AU, or who is eligible to join the AU based on the common values, then we know that we will be able, you know, to maintain a proper, something that I can call good governance.
Some of the key takeouts that we can draw from this is the crucial need for good and effective governance to ensure that people do not take matters into their hands, and to ensure that sound military, or rather sound civil military relations, are in place in countries like the ones in West Africa that we've just focused on today. I think it's also important for us to say that regional bodies like the African Union, ECOWAS and others really need to be more proactive in ensuring that the values, the shared and common values that form the foundational principles of these regional bodies and the African Union are really in place, that these shared and common values ensure that the leaders are also held to account. So please comment and leave your thoughts in the comment section below. Remember to like, share, and subscribe to our channel, and join us again for another Good Governance Conversation.